All right, so I think that's everybody. So welcome to Black Belt Exchange and Office 365 PowerShell. I'm Steve Goodman. I'm a senior consultant at Cyber in the UK. And hopefully I can show you a little bit today to become zero to hero over the course of the next hour or so. I work as a consultant on a day-to-day basis, helping customers in our Office 365 Global Center of Excellence with Exchange and generally Office 365 migrations, whether that's moving to the cloud or if that's implementing the latest version of Exchange 2013 on-prem. As well as that, I host a podcast if you're interested in listening to the latest news for Exchange, Office 365 and Link, the UC Architects. So today we're going to start with some of the basics, automation, covering how to monitor your environment, basic kind of troubleshooting, and along the way cover off some of the useful scripts that you might find along the way through the internet, such as some of my own scripts, to help you get the best out of your Exchange environment. So we're going to start with the very basics, but we're going to go fairly quickly through it. So I'm going to do a one slide key concepts of PowerShell. This isn't intended to be a deep dive into PowerShell throughout this session. It's really about the parts of PowerShell that really relate to Exchange and the Exchange Online parts of Office 365 and user provisioning. So we're really looking at the practical sort of stuff that you can take away and use today. There's a lot of good stuff on doing some very advanced specific things with PowerShell, but we're aiming to focus on just the key things that really relate to Exchange. So PowerShell, if you've never used it before, is similar in concept to the Unix-like admin tools of the past and, for some, the current. So when I first started in IT, I was an NT4 admin, and I used to spend a lot of my time creating users, enabling mailboxes on Exchange 5, and I did a little bit of playing around with Unix. And one of the other teams, they were very sort of closed off, and one of them was going away for quite a long period of time and said, well, why don't you come into the Unix team? You know, we'll show you what we do. And I got to see why they seemed to sit around all day doing what seemed like very little, because they'd scripted most of their job using shell scripts. And I really liked that. And I spent the next few years doing that, doing Unix admin, a bit of NT4 admin, and trying to automate everything I possibly could, both on Windows and on the Unix systems as well. And I think I got to a point where I was taking the data from Windows servers, processing it as text files on Unix servers, and then putting it back onto the Windows boxes. And that was very good. But one of the problems with Unix scripting is it's parsing text files using sed and awk and commands with very complicated parameters, and it's always hard to remember what to do, even if you've been scripting for a while. And PowerShell really sort of builds on that. PowerShell is object-oriented, which means that instead of passing text from one command to another, it passes the whole object, a list of variables, which you can then use from command to command, and the data remains intact. You don't have to process it and pick it apart with each operation. And it's easy to discover what things do. So the commands, they're really called commandlets. And they're called commandlets because instead of being big, they're sort of small. They all do a small, specific purpose. So a normal command, you might have a command and it has a parameter and it can do everything. One command that can add users, remove users. In PowerShell, you'll have a special commandlet to do certain things, but they'll all be categorized together. And the way a PowerShell commandlet is formed is in a verb-noun basis. For example, if we're trying to do some work with mailboxes, we might use get-mailbox or its equivalent set-mailbox. Or if we were going to create a new mailbox, new-mailbox. So it's easy to discover what things do, and they use common terms. So we won't find that get-mailbox is one way that it is, and in another commandlet, for example, trying to find out mailbox sizes, it won't be retrieve mailbox statistics. They'll use that common verb across commands that are trying to retrieve data back. And we also get parameters as well, and they're common across the whole of PowerShell. So if you were using PowerShell, then you can use the fields. So it's always the same format, like, for example, hyphen first name, hyphen last name, as opposed to normal command line switches where it might be forward slash parameter, or it might be a hyphen parameter, or sometimes even a double hyphen parameter. PowerShell is consistent, which means that it's easy for you to start by knowing some basic commands and then discover what they do as you go along. And you can combine PowerShell commands together. So if you've ever heard of a snappy one-liner in PowerShell, then this is how you make them. You use the pipeline. So effectively, you're getting the results from a command, for example, a list of all the mailboxes, and then you're putting it down a pipe, which is that pipe symbol there, and then you're putting it into another command so it can do something with it. The command you pass it to knows that that's a list of users, it knows what type they are, it knows what the username field means, it knows what the department name field means, and it can do something with it. So we have a really simple example, third from the bottom, where, for example, we might change the company name, and we want to change that for all users. We want to change the field in Active Directory for company. So we do get hyphen user, that retrieves everybody in the company and puts it into the pipeline. We send it to the set hyphen user commandlet, and then we decide that we will set the company field to Contoso for everybody. And it'll whir away and change the company name for everybody. Obviously, that could have undesired effects if you didn't want to change the company name for everybody, but we'll get on to how you sort of check for things like that in a bit. But you can see the simplicity of it. We don't need to find the field inside some text file or import file. We can get that data out and just throw it to the next command and let it deal with it. And if we were doing things like template users, we can use variables, for example. A variable is a way of storing some data from PowerShell inside that PowerShell session. So it's not stored on the server per se, it's just stored in memory, just in that command window. And we define that by doing the dollar sign and then any name we want. For example, template user, it could be almost anything. And then we can get the results of an example user by using equals and then get user, and then we'll put the username in there. That'll do the same command that it would do, but instead of displaying it on the screen, it'll store it in that variable. So every time we type that variable, it'll show that same result at that snapshot in time. If we decided that we were going to use that as a template user to set the company field, we can have a look inside that variable. Because it's object-oriented, we can find the company name inside that variable. So we can put template user dot company. The same as we can see the field names up there, we'll see the field names inside the variable. So we could set all the users to match that template user. For example, if there was a field that you allowed your help desk to update on a template user and that would be applied across the board, this could be an example of where you had a scheduled job that would get a template user and then apply it to everybody else. And that's the basics of PowerShell. Once you know those kind of things, then you can do almost anything. So what are we going to focus on managing in PowerShell? So Windows Server, the whole product line, applications, server, is all based on PowerShell under the hood for management. So if you open up Server Management, you probably know that that is based on PowerShell. A lot of the server setup, adding roles, configuring roles across the board, all done in that. But today, we're going to focus on what we can do with the on-premises Exchange environment, what we can do in Exchange Online, and things that tie those two together in a hybrid environment, like Windows Azure Active Directory. So we'll focus on the older dir-sync way of managing things because that's the most common one that we see at the moment. And there's a lot you can do. So what kind of things are you likely to have to do with PowerShell? So we can see that's us in the middle with that big administrative workstation. And on the left-hand side, we've got the Exchange on-premises server. Well, that could be our hybrid server. And we can manage objects in the Active Directory. We can manage mail-enabled users, mailboxes, databases. Anything that you can do in the Exchange Admin Center, you can do with PowerShell, even more. And on the other side, we've got Exchange Online. So we can see the Azure Active Directory in the bottom right-hand corner. And the same set of objects can be managed via PowerShell. The only difference here is we don't have access to things like the databases. They're managed by Microsoft in Exchange Online. So, how do you connect to Exchange On-Prem? The easiest way is launching the Exchange Management Shell. You launch that and you're in. If you don't have the Exchange Management tools installed on an administrative workstation, you don't want to connect to a server, then you can connect from any computer on your corporate network that's logged in with the right credentials, or even specify them here. So we can the first line here, we're going to ask PowerShell to prompt us for some admin credentials. So we'll store those in a variable called $UserCredential. We'll type that, and it'll pop up an authentication prompt. We'll then create a new session, and we'll store the configuration for that inside a variable. And we'll use the new pssession command, and we'll see we use, again, it's using the same sort of format we saw with those other commands, where we're specifying the field name for the connection name, the URI to connect to, which will be one of our Exchange servers. We'll specify an authentication type of Kerberos, and then we'll pass those credentials to it. And then we can import that module, which includes all the commands that have been loaded from the Exchange server, ready to use. And then we're as good as sitting on the Exchange server. We can get mailbox information. We can save mailbox information. And it's the same with Exchange Online as well. So again, we can collect the credentials from the user. Again, these could be federated credentials, so it could even be the same username and password that you're using for on-premises. And this time, we use a different URL to connect to. So you're probably familiar with outlook.office365.com. That has a subdirectory for PowerShell. We connect using basic authentication, and that will authenticate us either using the cloud ID for administrators, or it could be a federated administrator ID, which will then reach back and authenticate via ADFS to your on-prem infrastructure. We also have an extra flag there to allow redirection, because the endpoint that we connect to initially gets redirected to one of the pod servers that sit below in the Exchange Online infrastructure. And again, we import that module. So if we had two different PowerShell sessions open, we could have one there with Exchange on-premises and one with Exchange Online. We could take the same type of commands and get mailbox information, set mailbox information, all in those two different sessions. But if you're looking to automate, then it's worth having a look at using both together. So here, we're going to connect to both Exchange on-premises and Exchange Online from the same session. And what we're looking to do there is allow us to retrieve objects. For example, if we wanted to set that company name both on our on-prem users and the users in the cloud, or if we wanted to perhaps adjust policies. A good example might be disabling ActiveSync for everybody across the organization. Both on-prem and on cloud, we'd need to have two PowerShell sessions for that, and we can have a single session where we can use one set of commands, one script, to do it in both environments in one go. There is a problem with just using the commands on the previous two slides, because the commandlets are the same. Get mailbox on-prem and get mailbox in the cloud are both the same commands, and of course, which one are you going to use? Well, there's a clever trick that we'll see in the first commandlet there, where we connect to Office 365, and when we import the session, we add this prefix here. And what that will do is prefix every command that's loaded from Office 365 with cloud. So if we want to get a mailbox, we'll get a cloud mailbox. That could be anything you want. You could call it XO Mailbox or Exchange Online Mailbox. There's some scripts out there that use this format, and cloud seems to be a good way of differentiating between the two. Again, you could do the same with the on-prem session, and just to make sure that you were definitely sure which environment you were modifying, you could do a prefix for on-prem. So it would be get on-prem mailbox, for example. And then we'll be able to get information from both environments in one go. So get cloud mailbox Lisa, get mailbox Steve. One's in the cloud, one's on premises, but we've still been able to get that information from one session, and then we could do something with that within a script. The Azure Active Directory is the interface that you have into effectively the Office 365 portal. This gives us the PowerShell interface to do all the same sort of management that you'd be able to do through that UI, in particular, licensing. You install the Azure Active Directory module for PowerShell manually. You can't connect to it in the same easy way that you can, like Exchange Online. What you'll need to do is download the sign-in assistant and also download the module itself and install that onto an admin workstation or potentially your DirSync server or ADFS server. Once that's installed, then we can use that same set of credentials that we connected to Exchange Online if we're planning on managing the environment all from one session. Perhaps we're going to automate some tasks. And then we can connect over HTTPS to the Azure Active Directory, which will give us all the interface we need to edit the attributes that can only be edited via Azure AD. And then we can use the set of commands there. And they'll use the MSOL user as the prefix. So MSOL stands for Microsoft Online. There's other parts that we might want to automate as well if we're trying to automate the management and creation of a hybrid environment or a mixed environment where we're synchronizing the local AD to the cloud. And that's the DirSync module. The DirSync module is the interface to the synchronization engine which copies your local AD into Office 365. Until recently, you would add this as a PowerShell snap-in. So if you're on a previous version of the DirSync software and are upgrading, and you've already been using this command to force a sync, then when you install the latest version, you have to import that as a PowerShell module. So when you import the PowerShell module for DirSync, it gives you, in particular, the start online coexistence sync commandlet. What that does is it triggers a replication. So you kick that off, and then Forefront Identity Manager in the background will run a number of jobs to copy information from the local AD into Office 365. So if you've just created a new local user and you want to immediately make sure that gets moved into Office 365, then you can start online coexistence sync and you can trigger within your script the creation of the user without having to wait for 3 hours. So what does that give us? It gives us the ability to automate almost anything. So we can create a new on-premises AD account. We can pick and choose. We could write a script that had the logic to, depending on the person's category within the organization, make them on-prem or make them in the cloud. We can force the creation of a mailbox in Office 365 and make sure that it immediately takes what will be a new Office 365 mailbox and put it into the cloud immediately. Assign licenses to the mailboxes automatically. Make sure that they've got the licenses they need for their role. Automatically update those licenses as and when is needed. Another one might be to look at on-premises Active Directory attributes and use those to define the licenses that you're going to apply. Or assigning policies in Exchange Online. You'll need to connect to that if you want to, even if you've got DirSync and you want to enable things like OWA policies, ActiveSync policies, you'll still need to connect to Exchange Online to do those kind of actions. You can't do them all on-prem in a hybrid environment. So a few examples of these commandlets in a sort of workflow that you might use. So if we're going to create a new user in Office 365 in a hybrid or an environment that uses DirSync, where AD is the master for the on-premises accounts, we'll create a new remote mailbox. That creates a new mailbox in Office 365. Or rather, by running it, it just creates a new user with all the attributes it needs for DirSync to know to create an account in Office 365. We might want to add them to a distribution group as well, you know, if you've got an all-staff emailing list. Once we've created that in the local AD, we want to trigger a sync to Office 365, which we'll do with DirSync. So we'll use the module for DirSync to start online coexistence sync. And then, once we're happy that that's been created in Office 365, we can use the set MSOL user to set things like the usage location, the kind of variables that you have to go in to the portal and set. So to set that they're a US, UK, for example. And then also set the license, so to give them E3 licenses. We also might have to do a few setting changes as well. If we've created a US user and it's an EU tenant, we might want to set their default time zone to America first, so they don't have to drop down from a list and do that. We can automate that. Again, we might want to set some CAS mailbox settings. So a lot of those settings where we're using CAS mailbox, those are the ones that you usually have to set in Exchange Online. The rest are on-prem. So let's walk through that exact process. So before the demos began, I've used that set of commands to connect my environment up to Office 365. So at this point, we're ready to go. And the script that we're looking at is a fairly simple script. So we're using some of the concepts that we've talked about. So if we have a look here, we've used some variables to set the person's name. So this isn't a generic script at this point. It's the simplest script you could write. And we need a couple of variables to make this work. And we're going to define these very, very simply. So we're choosing the first name, Joe, and last name, Blogs. And we'll use those variables to then combine and concatenate to make things like the username. So in our organization, our username format is going to be firstname.lastname. We'll create a display name as well for them. So we'll then set some other variables for the display name, where in the quotes, we'll then use the variables that we defined on those first two lines to make the display name. Again, we do the same thing for the alias. The alias is what we'll make things like the email address from. You'll see that we put those in brackets because that allows us to quote the variables within a string, which is the text definition. We'll also set a remote routing address because this is a hybrid environment, so we're going to route mail from on-premises into Office 365 so they'll show in a common global address list. And we also want to create them in a particular organization unit. So in this case, we create them in exchangelabs.co.uk/people. We're also going to give us a chance to pop up and give us a password prompt. And again, we'll use that get credential commandlet that we used in those earlier examples for connecting to Exchange Online. And we'll use that, the results from that command, to just pick out the password. And that'll give us a secure, readily encrypted, secure password that we can then use to create the new AD account. The next line is new remote mailbox. And then on that big long line, we'll specify all those variables. So these are the same variables that you'll see if you were to do this in the Exchange Admin Center. So if we went in and created a new mailbox and picked it Office 365, then we'd be able to do so. So there's a bug in my hybrid environment where it's not showing, but that's what we'd see. We'd see remote mailbox, and then we'd be able to pick out the user variables here. So all these variables, for example, first name, initials, last name, display name, They're all the variables that we're able to specify via PowerShell. And if we're going to do it via the UI, then we'll still see those same, we'll still be setting exactly the same back-end variables, and we'll still actually be running the same commandlets under the hood. We're also going to use that add distribution member commandlet. So after we've created that new remote mailbox, we'll have an Active Directory account. So we'll add them to full-time equivalent staff, and we'll add the email address of the new account, which is also going to be used for our UPN. With that account created in the local AD, we'll then start an online coexistence sync to then trigger a directory sync replication from the local AD into Office 365. Now, because that takes some time, you'll see we've got a loop. So a loop in PowerShell allows us to do the same thing over and over again. And this is a very simple loop where all I'm doing is seeing whether the user exists. I'm using the exclamation mark to negate what I'm checking for. So I'm saying, if it doesn't exist, then I just want you to sleep for 10 seconds and keep on trying. So it's just going to pause there for 10 seconds, do another check, until the forefront identity manager bits have all done their process to create the user in the cloud. And then once that user exists in the cloud, we're going to set the usage location to the US, and we're going to apply the Enterprise Pack licensing, which is the E3 license pack. We'll then use our connection to Exchange Online to set the CAS mailbox settings. You'll see we prefix those with Cloud CAS mailbox, and then we're going to add them into the ActiveSync mailbox policy called Corp, which gives them a particular set of settings appropriate to that group of users. And then we'll set some regional configuration. As we mentioned, we can set things like the time zone, date format, and we'll configure that there so the user doesn't have to put it in themselves. So I'm going to run this now. I may get a prompt to connect back to Exchange Online, because if we leave it for 15 minutes or so, it disconnects us. So once that reloads the commandlets, it'll start the provisioning process. So we've created Joe Blogs. That's showing the output there. And right now, it should be triggering Forefront Identity Manager in the background. So we should see, and that's quite small up there, it's in progress. It's exporting the local AD into Office 365. Once that export finishes, then the script's going to continue. So in the background, we're just running through that while command. So at the moment, it's waiting 10 seconds, and it's checking again to see if that user exists. Then waiting 10 seconds again. The equivalent to that, if we were waiting and doing this on-premises, would be to go into the Exchange Online portal, in the Office 365 portal, I should say, and search for that user. So searching for Joe, waiting until he's created. So we should see our script continue in just a moment. So if we have a look at Joe at the moment, we should see that he shouldn't have a license assigned yet. So we'll see no license assigned. So if we were the administrator, we'd have to go in and do that ourselves. So we'd have to log into the portal, find the new user that had been created after 3 hours, and do it. In this case, it's going to go on to the next step as soon as it's able to see him in Microsoft Online. We know he's there, so I'm going to go ahead with the next part in case it's hanged. So if I press go, then we can set the usage location. Oh, that's why it's not working. So if we start that again, that should work correctly. So that's going to run through those commands and set all those settings. So if we now go back into the portal, we should see that it's correctly applied those settings and Joe's licensed. And we'll see he's got an E3 panel license. And because we haven't seen any output from the PowerShell commandlet, we can assume it's completed successfully for the Exchange Online commandlets. So how can we use this as part of automation? We've done a basic script that does a one-off creation. We can see that we need to wrap in some error checking. We also need to wrap in some other bits and pieces. But what can you automate? Well, there's lots and lots. So there's a few slides on this here, but there's tons. So mailbox creations. So if you're going to create mailboxes, then you get a list from HR or another department, then you should look and see if you can automate them. Deletions are another thing. So an organization I used to work at in the past, deletions was a big problem. We couldn't just delete a user. There was a staged process, and it had to be followed correctly. We'd have to start by disabling the accounts. We'd have to then make sure that relevant people in the organization had access to that account if they needed to retrieve business data. And we also needed to make sure that after a certain amount of time, the data was deleted from the organization, and we could confirm that it was done correctly. So making sure that you can automate that means that you can follow those processes and, of course, log that you're doing it correctly. Updating email addresses. It's quite common for organizations to change company name, merge acquisitions, or perhaps change the email address format. Email address policies can help you do that, but there's going to be times when the requirements are a little bit more complicated. And you can automate doing those kind of tasks. For example, if you're going to remove old addresses like X400 addresses from your environment, if you're trying to remove an old domain name that was no longer in use, you might want to automate the addition and removal from distribution groups. You can use dynamic distribution groups for some things, but there might be cases where you're getting a feed from HR, and it makes more sense to automate it using PowerShell. And bulk applying policies, like in place hold. If you're adding new users in your organization, either to on-premises or Exchange Online, then you'll need to add them to in-place hold policies to make sure they comply with your hold policies, for example, if you need to keep all email for 5 years, you don't want to forget to do that and leave a user without it. You want to make sure that that's reapplied. So it might be an automated script that runs every night that makes sure that all the relevant users in scope have the correct policy. It may be that people fall out of policy and have a different one applied. Mobile device policies as well. Based on the type of user, where they are in the organization, you might give them different policies. If, for example, you add them to an Android users group, then you give them more relaxed policies to cope with its deficiencies. Enabling and disable OWA for users is another common one that I see. Some organizations don't want certain categories of staff to access OWA at all, but they want other people to be able to do so. That's a perfect one for automation. Enabling users for unified messaging as part of creation, and of course, as we've seen before, changing contact details, job title, and so on. Changing the sort of Active Directory objects, all those attributes that relate to the business information about a user, and stamping them in the right place to make sure that they're correct. Setting account expiry dates to make sure that when you know someone is leaving, their account gets disabled automatically. If you've got a large exchange environment, you might want to look at how you could automate moving users around so you haven't got too many users on one database. Or to make sure that your databases aren't growing too large, you might want to rebalance databases, move users so they're effectively distributed across your environment and they match the design of your exchange database availability groups. Or, if you're moving away from something like public folders, creating shared calendars or shared mailboxes with standard settings, making sure that you always apply the same set of calendar permissions to each set of users. For example, if you were going to automatically create a shared calendar for someone and that was going to be in a shared mailbox, then what you might want to do is set somebody as an editor and then a whole bunch of other people with read-only access. And that's something that instead of just creating a shared mailbox and giving it to a user, you could automate that process. So if you've got a system that can input into this kind of workflow, then you could allow them to specify the people that can access the shared mailbox or shared calendar at the time of creation, and then automate it. There's more. So if you're looking to migrate to a different environment, particularly Office 365, then trying to find out information about the organization. You can automate the collection of that. You don't need to go through receive connectors and screenshot them, databases, and screenshot the whole environment. You can pull out that information and record it. So you can export information from the environment and save it to something like an Excel file. You might need to do some remediation in the environment. A common thing that we'll see with Office 365 migrations is needing to change the UPN. So a lot of organizations don't use the same domain name internally as they do externally. So their email address might be jim@contoso.com, but internally their UPN, their user principal name, will be jim@contoso.local. When Office 365 comes along, they might need to change that UPN, add a UPN suffix to the Active Directory, and then automate the update of that across the environment so it creates the correct matching account in Office 365. There's tools that can help you identify that and do that, but you can also script that. So it's very common to see a PowerShell script is used to check and update the UPN for users before implementation of dir/sync and hybrid. If you're a company that's setting up Office 365 a lot and you've got a standard design that you use over and over again, and you can make that machine readable, you've got a set of common configuration settings, then you could automate the setup and configuration of your Office 365 tenants. So they can configure the right set of policies. If you're migrating mailboxes, then that's definitely something that you might want to automate. If you want to schedule that as a task, so you're not having to monitor the migration yourself. So you can create batches for Office 365 migrations. So if you know when users are going to move, if you're using a tool like Excel to collate and organize your mailbox migrations, you can use the data that you export from that to then create those batches and start the migration off. The list just goes on. Anything you can do, you can automate. The question is, what should you automate, though? Because I admit it, there's things that I'll do in the user interface. If I was creating a single user, and I'd do it very, very rarely, and I was in a very basic organization, or I just have to do a task once, then if it's easier to do it in the user interface, then do it in the user interface. If it takes longer to automate, then what's the point in automating it? If you could do it quicker just by going into the EAC or doing a few PowerShell scripts, you know, a simple script to just do it once, then do it that way. You don't have to automate everything. What you want to do is make sure that you're actually bringing yourself some value. If it's something that you're going to do multiple times and the effort that you put in that first time to automate it is going to be less than it's going to take you the next 10 times or however many, then it's worth doing. Because sometimes you can just have a procedure to do things. You know, for example, I would expect it would be easier to delegate the help desk role to service desk people so they can set out of office than it would for you to write a script to automate setting out of office for users. Because they'll be the ones that are going to be setting out of office, and you might not be able to delegate a PowerShell script to them, and so you might end up having to do it yourself. So it might take them 5 minutes, and you no minutes, but if you automate it, then it might take you 1 minute, and then no minutes. And I'd rather keep that minute to myself and let the service desk do it. So sometimes giving people a procedure is absolutely fine and easier for them. And the other thing about automation is you can do a lot of damage. So if we decided that we had a list of users we were going to disable and that we were going to remove their mailbox from Exchange, leave the AD accounts, and we thought, I know, I'm going to automate that task, and I got it wrong, then I could do a lot of damage to my organisation. I could create myself a massive, massive headache and possibly generate my own sort of pink slip P45. And that kind of damage is why people are often scared of PowerShell. So what you want to do is make sure you are checking for errors before you automate stuff. Be very careful. The what if parameter is key to checking scripts before you run them. Are you going to be able to delegate it? Is this going to be a task you have to do because you've automated it? And does it plug into something else? So if you've got a service desk system, does it have the ability to plug into PowerShell? A lot of customers I work with have identity management systems, Orchestrator, and we're looking at how we can automate some of these common tasks. So the service desk isn't having to actually do this kind of stuff themselves. A user can go to a form, enter the details that they need in Service Manager, for example, and then Orchestrator can then go in the background, and assuming it's in policy, it'll apply those settings and run a PowerShell script in the background. That's the perfect kind of automation, because what we're doing then is we're taking away that work from us to have to do, and we're handing it over to the users. If they want to, if there's a process where they can go through a workflow to order a license for example, project, they can go to Service Manager, they can select project, the workflow approves it after their manager says yes, then we could automate that via PowerShell, because as you saw a few slides back, it's a single command. So as long as that's verified and checked before it's ran, it's a perfect thing to automate, and it's very simple. That would be a 2 or 3 line script to connect to the service and then add that license after checking they don't already have it. So if you want to automate things and you don't really know where to start, then you need the template for doing it once if you're going to do it many times. So if you know PowerShell, then you can use start transcript to record what you're doing. Start-transcript creates a text file with a log of everything you do in a PowerShell session. That's useful if you're, like me, a consultant, and you want to verify to the customer that you did what you said you did, or you might want to log what you're doing just in case you need to retrace your steps. But it's also very useful if you're looking to automate a task and you're not sure really what you're going to do and you're just doing it against a test user. Start transcript, get it right, and then go through your transcript and pick out the commands you needed. And then you can use that as the basis of your script to automate. And if you don't know PowerShell well, then you've got the Exchange Admin Center and Exchange Online and on-premises, where you can look at the command logging, and the Exchange Management Console in Exchange 2010 gives you the command it's going to run. You can click on a button in the bottom right-hand corner of each PowerShell, of each EMC window before you press OK and see the PowerShell that would have been used. So you can go into the UI, make the changes, and before pressing Apply, click a button and it'll show you the PowerShell. You can copy that out and use that as your template. So what about if you think of automating some common tasks. Well, if it's a common task, has somebody else already done it? This is where scripts are useful. Licensing in Office 365, I've got a whole bunch of scripts that I've written. Other people have written scripts. You'll find three or four good licensing scripts in the TechNet gallery, examples from Microsoft, to automate licensing in Office 365. You might find that there's already one that fits the bill for you. People have different requirements. It might be selecting groups to license people in PowerShell. It might be looking at attributes in AD. You may find one that already fits exactly what you need, or you have to customize it in a limited way to make it work. Rebalancing mailbox. That's a good example of a script I've written that allows you to scan the environment and then move mailboxes around depending on where they could go. Have a look at some of the other scripts I've written if you want those kind of examples. For example, if you're worried about the latest iOS bugs with Exchange, then you can scan the environment and find iOS users on the latest version and hopefully stop them from doing any damage if there's an Apple update that causes, for example, one a while back caused bad log growth. So learning from other people's scripts is a really good way of trying to understand how PowerShell works. And a lot of scripts you'll find in the TechNet gallery are licensed in a way that allows you to reuse that, whether that's if you want to blog and write your own scripts or you want to just use them internally. A script I've written, somebody took that script and they've improved it in a different way, and I think that's absolutely fantastic. Or if you just want to get an idea of how to do something, if that's to recursively get the people in a group, then you might find a script that does it and then just use that for your own purposes where it's appropriate. Learning from the way other people do things can really help. So once you've got that template, you need to make some sort of a script to use that. So you're going to need input to that script. So there's a way of taking parameters and making your own pseudo commandlet, where you can take the same parameters that you'll get if you're using a normal PowerShell command. You might have variables that you need to set. We saw in our earlier example with a simple script where we set some core variables at the beginning. And are we going to need to loop through it? Are we going to need to retrieve information? Are we going to need to cycle through a list that we retrieve before we can check and see if the mailbox already exists in the environment before we create it, for example? So should you check for errors? Some scripts are very simple, and they're a one-time sort of task that you can automate. For example, if we were setting Exchange ActiveSync policies, but we might want to check for errors. So a couple of examples. So we'll automate a one-time task where we'll disable ActiveSync for some group members. And then we'll automate a regular task that our service desk has to do on a normal basis, creating a shared mailbox. So you see, this first demo is very simple. So we've got a group in the cloud, and it's called No EAS. So before we run that, we'll have a look and see who's in it. We could find out the same information in the Exchange Admin Center by having a look in recipients and groups. And we'll see the No EAS group. If we weren't sure how to do that in PowerShell, obviously we can do it there. We can use the command logging to go and find out the command to use to get the distribution group members by pressing show command logging. But now we've verified that is the list of people that we want. We just want to apply it. So we'll set ActiveSync enabled to false. If we weren't sure where to find that command, then again, we could go into the EAC, select a user, with the command logging open, make that change, and it'll show us the command that we need to use. Once we're happy with that, we just press go, and then that's going to get the results from this get distribution group member, and it's going to pipe that to set cloud CAS mailbox and disable ActiveSync. And because we don't get any output, then we know that that worked successfully. For example, if we run it again, then we'll see that no changes have been made. If we wanted to test that before we run it, then we could use what if. And that'll tell us what the command's going to do before we go. We're fairly confident we know what that was going to do, though. And it'll show us, without making any changes, setting client access server mailbox test 1, so we'll know who that affected. So that's very, very simple automation. We've just saved ourselves possibly hours in trying to identify all those people manually and make those changes. If we have a look at something a little bit more complicated, we have a look at a simple script. So there's a lot you can do with parameters and making sure that they're checked properly and making sure that they're correct types. But we're going to look at the very simplest way of taking parameters in PowerShell, where at the top of the script, we use the param commandlet. And then we specify all the fields as variable names. So this will take hyphen department, hyphen alias, hyphen display name, hyphen manager, and a list of comma-separated usernames that will have access to that mailbox. We'll then set some basic variables in that script. This is an on-prem environment. Assuming we've got lots of domain controllers and we're making lots of different actions, we're going to apply all these actions against a particular domain controller in that line that says domain controllers. We'll also specify a default OU where we're going to keep mailboxes to make sure that they always go in the right place, because that's not something we want someone that's running the script to change. This doesn't give complete full range to the person using it. It's doing it within a defined set of boundaries. And again, we set things like the UPN domain and the mailbox database that we're going to store shared mailboxes in, so it always ends up in the right place. So we don't want anyone running this commandlet to be able to change those settings. If they haven't given us any information about the department, then we might give them a list of departments so we can pick from a list. If they haven't given us an alias, we can get it and we can check it. So we've got some basic error checking, we've got some basic checking to see whether or not the alias already exists, whether the mailbox already exists, before we start creating anything. So we've got checks all the way across that. And then we want to check that the person who is going to be the manager actually has a mailbox. If they're not specified, then we'll give the user an opportunity to enter an email address for a mailbox, and we'll also check each username that they've given us to make sure that the list of usernames is correct. So we're using the if statement to check whether something's true. So that's a conditional operator where we're checking to see if username is defined, or in some cases, if it isn't defined. Before we make any further changes, we're going to sanitize the input of the user. So we're going to convert the alias they've entered to lowercase, because that's the format we use. So if they want to create a shared mailbox and they've put it all in capitals, we're going to make sure it's in lowercase so it meets our organization policies. We'll also create the UPN based on the alias they've provided and the UPN domain. And then we can test the creation and then go for it. So this script I could run as a normal PowerShell commandlet and specify the variables here. And it'll let me tab through all those parameters. So if I needed to create a batch of shared mailboxes, then I could define in a CSV file all those display names and then loop through in another script the batch creation. Or if I'm just doing it once, because I'm allowing this to accept input from the command line, I can just press run or just run the script without any parameters and type some information in. Pick a user. And our administrator is going to be the admin of it. And our two on-premises users will have access. So we'll check that that looks okay. So it says, what if? It's going to create a shared mailbox with the UPN shared 01 at Exchange Labs in Organization Unit Exchange Labs People. We're happy with that. We'll hit enter. It's created the shared mailbox and it will apply all those permissions, ready for us to use. So we've been able to automate what could be a complicated procedure. So next is monitoring and troubleshooting. So there's a lot you can monitor in Exchange, but the question is, what should you monitor? So if you're going to proactively monitor it for failures, is writing a PowerShell script to do it a good idea? I wouldn't say so, because that's something that you, as an administrator, are going to have to maintain for the future. So use an off-the-shelf solution. Microsoft makes some great solutions. You've got managed availability, and you've got System Center Operations Manager. There's a lot of third-party solutions out there that can do the same thing for you as well. So if you want to know that Exchange is broken, you might not want to rely on your own PowerShell script to tell you. If it breaks, you'll be the one that gets blamed. But there's times that you might need to get some information out. So a regular overview of the environment. So you might want to get a report about the Exchange environment to give you a high-level view of what's there. You might want to monitor the growth of databases, particular mailboxes, to see what the environment looks like. That might be something that you're not monitoring in terms of whether something's going wrong, but it might be something that you want to track over time. You might, for example, if you're using Exchange Online, want to export some logs to keep on-prem. An example is the message tracing logs. If you need to keep message tracing logs for more than the default specified in Exchange Online, you could export those as a text file on a regular basis using a scheduled task and then use that information in another system, import it into your syslog server, for example, or just keep them for your records. If you've got a monitoring system that does have an interface and you want to build a bridge between it, then you could use PowerShell, for example, to set up notifications and push data across between the two if you don't want to have to build a system from scratch, and collecting data for some troubleshooting. So monitoring environment for growth. You can export data and then look at it elsewhere. So we've got a commandlet called export CLI XML. And that does something reasonably clever. That allows us to take the output from a PowerShell command and then save it for later use. It's a snapshot of the output from that commandlet at a point in time. We can then look at it again in the future using the import CLI XML commandlet. So if in 6 months we want to have a look at what a particular mailbox looked like, we could do get-mailbox, pipe that to export-CLI XML to an XML file, and that'll be the output from the PowerShell command at that time. It'll tell us what email addresses it had. We can then import that back and have another look. Let's have a look at monitoring mailbox size then. So this is exactly how simple it is. We've got a couple of scripts, a couple of lines in the script here, where we can export some data. So if we have a look at the first line, get cloud mailbox statistics. That's going to get all the mailbox statistics for my mailbox. So if I was to run that normally in PowerShell, then I'd get some information about the size of my mailbox, the item count, and so on. So I can see I've got an item count of far too many, 70,000 messages. I can export that as a point-in-time snapshot, and it'll keep that forever. So yesterday, I had a look at how many items I got, and I've got an XML file called mailbox statistics yesterday. So if I want to have a look at what they were yesterday, I could just import that back in, and it'll give me the output from then. So yesterday, I had 70,013, and now I've got 70,098. And if I want to compare the two, I can. So in this line here, I import back in today's items that I've exported, and I import back in yesterday's items, and I pick out just the item count. Then I use the if statement to compare the two. So I'm looking to see if today's items is greater than yesterday's items. And if it is, then it'll tell me so. If it's not, I'm doing well. And if I haven't got any change between yesterday and today, I'll be worried. And you could use this to compare all sorts of things across your environment. So if we run this here, it should tell me. Yes, messages are piling up. You have 85 new messages. That's more than I expected to get. So yes, you could apply that to all sorts of things across your environment, particularly things like database sizes, monitoring white space, trying to track growth. You could export that to Excel if you want, and perhaps monitor it in with graphs, or even export it and use it with something like Power BI. You can do all sorts of things once you've got the data at hand. So what about troubleshooting? So a common example is trying to set the troubleshooting logging level across a number of servers. So we're going to do a quick example of how we're going to switch on some increased logging level across everything. We don't want to have to do this manually across every single server in our environment. And then we want to, at a later point in time, retrieve and collate the logs. And we'll filter that for some specific errors. And after that, I'll show you a quick demo of how we might want to have a look for some errors in some IIS log files. So on the first line here, we're looking at the get exchange server commandlet. That gives us a list of all the exchange servers in our environment. So if we run that, see I've got a very small demo environment here with just the one server. But however many we've got, we can then pass that into a loop where we're going to set the event log level for that computer name, and then we're going to set the log level to expert so we can get all the information that we need to perform that troubleshooting. After we've left that on for a while, we can then programmatically get some information from the event logs. So here we're looking at the application log, we're going to look for MS Exchange Transport, and we're after everything within the last 5 minutes, that's an entry type information. And then we'll sort it by time. So that should show a whole bunch of information about MS Exchange Transport. A lot gets logged, so it can take quite a while to do. That's why we've only got 5 minutes showing up there. And once that completes, that'll give us a whole long list of all the items in the event log that relate to it. Our next example, while that's running, is looking at IIS event logs. So the first line that we've got here is the basic command on how we'll search for a particular type of log if we want to find errors in the IIS event logs. If we know that they're all in a common location across the CAS servers, then we can do so by searching in inetpub log files and then just searching for the 500 error. If we're looking for RPC errors, then we could then pipe that into /RPC, which will then give us that data. And again, like we did with the previous command, we can use get exchange server to go through each of these servers and pull off those logs. So if we have a look here, we've got our information back and it's telling us the collated information across those logs. So let's have a look at our IIS logs and run that command, and that'll just grab all the information across our exchange environment for any 500 errors. These ones that I think managed availability has been picking up. A good example might be looking for federation errors. And another thing is generating environment reports. A session on PowerShell for me wouldn't be complete without me pimping my Exchange environment report. And that's useful for getting a good overview of all sorts of things in your environment. It's sort of the high-level view, you know, the statistics of who in this room is interested in Exchange, who's interested in Office 365, the Exchange equivalent of that, where we're looking at the server versions in the environment, the patch levels. For example, any Office 365 consultants in the room will visit a customer and go, what version of Exchange have you got? What patch level, what update level is it? Well, this will tell you. And what about the mailbox distribution across the environment? If they've got multiple servers, multiple DAGs, multiple databases, trying to find out that information. When the last backups were. So a lot of customers, a lot of people who follow my blog have downloaded this script to use it. And that's the kind of information we get back. And that's a straightforward but long PowerShell script. So we can see we've got all that information, and we know that this environment, oh my God, I hope they don't want to move to Office 365, because they are on a very old version of Exchange 2010 and 2007. They needed to install a lot of update rollups. So we already know that we're going to be in for a bit of a bad time if we're going to migrate them to Office 365. There's a lot of patching ahead. But we've got an idea of what the environment looks like. We know what size mailboxes there are. We know what the average size is. We know what the total numbers are. And we know roughly what locations they are in as well. So if we're looking at moving via multiple endpoints from Office 365 into the Exchange environment, we might not be able to use this as a guide to start us with the sizing. We won't use it for the full sizing, but it will give us a good idea of how long it's going to take, how much bandwidth it's going to require. So it's a good high-level view. Or if you just want to have a look in the morning and see what the distribution of mailboxes is across your environment. Is all the mailboxes suddenly now on one server because there was a couple of server failures overnight? Now, that's quite a long script, and I'll show you very, very quickly through it. But you can create your own environment report, and I'm going to show a quick example of how to do that. And show you some of the bits from that Exchange environment report, but in a way that is a little bit easier to understand, because even if I go and edit that script, it's daunting. So I'm not expecting you in the next few minutes to be able to go through it and understand everything it does. So we're going to use some of these key bits that we're using in that Exchange environment report. Hash tables, which allow us to store data. They allow us to store data using the key and a value. That means if we're trying to look for data, for example, if we've got a list of databases, then we can pick that out easily because we can specify the variable name and then the database name without having to then to search through the entire list of databases. We can go straight to the information we need, and we can use, just like elsewhere in PowerShell, fields to access data. We'll use a couple of functions as well to automate the execution and separate the script up so it's not so... So the actual operations of the script are in one place, but the doing is elsewhere. That makes it easy to understand a script at a higher level and then dig into each function. And then you can reuse functions across multiple scripts. And then we'll output the results as HTML. So this is why I'm not going to go through this script line by line, because it's reasonably long. And you'll see we've got lots and lots of functions to pull off information from the environment. So we're trying to find out some complicated information and then do a few calculations on it to try and make sure it makes sense. The core of this script is much further down at the bottom, though. And that's the same kind of methods that we'll use in our simpler script. Where at the bottom of the script, we literally use these functions to get information. For example, rather than have a long script which goes through and tries to find all that database information, we're just calling each individual function. So for example, if we look in the middle of the screen there, we'll see get database. And that gets all that complicated database information, it does all those calculations, but it does it in just the one line there. It uses that function over and over again to get that information. And it uses it multiple times, depending on whether it's in a DAG or whether it's not in a DAG, 2007 environment. So some of those core concepts I've put into a smaller script, and that is intended to get some information about our Office 365 environment. It's a report that Microsoft don't have, and it's showing us what server and what database our mailboxes are on in Office 365. So if you've got a larger environment where you've got thousands of mailboxes and you're wondering, there's nothing you can do about it, you can't move databases around, but if you're wondering how many users are on the same database, how many are on the same server, what the distribution is like, which are in Amsterdam, which are in Dublin, then you could use this to find out, because the information's there for you to see. The core of the script, its actual doing, is here, right at the bottom, starting from this this output command, where we're starting the basic HTML. There's ways to write HTML in PowerShell, but they're usually a little bit messy. So because I'm using another script, I'm using my own script to do this, then I've just copied and pasted the stuff from one script into another. So I set the key things at the top. So I'm going to put a heading saying tenant database report. And then I start a table at the top that says mailbox databases. I copy and paste that. Let's say mailbox databases, Office 365. And the first thing I do is I define a variable called databases, and I get the data, and I get DBs. So I actually started off with the same big long commandlet that I had, or the big long function I had in the Exchange Environment report, but I tailored it for Office 365. And then I get the output, which is going to be some more HTML. I get a table of the databases formatted so it looks nice for the user. And then I finish off the HTML and put it into a file. So very, very simple set of functions. The logic of the script is simple. We get the databases as an object, and then we use the results of that to make a fancy-looking HTML table. Each function is very simple. So the get databases starts off with nothing. So we define a hash table where it says new hash table, where we do an at sign, and then we enclose the beginning of an empty hash table. And then we're going to get all the mailboxes in Office 365 in our tenant. We'll then use the results of that to pipe into get cloud mailbox statistics. That'll tell us the size of each mailbox in Office 365, and it'll tell us the item count, and we can use that information. The data returned isn't that readable for use later on in the script because of the way it comes back. So once we've got the user statistics for every single mailbox, then we'll loop through that. So we do a for each loop, where I is going to be each user one by one as it skips through. So the beginning of this loop is where we open the brackets here, and the end of that loop is right at the bottom. Because I'm using the PowerShell ISE, this enables me to easily see where the beginning and end of a function or a loop is. So if we go here, I can open it and close it. Then my for each loop, I can open it and close it and see where it starts and ends. The size that gets returned is in a plain text format where it says the size in gigabytes or megabytes, and then it has the size in bytes afterwards. So I'm mashing around with the text, and this is where PowerShell's not super, because because if the object returned isn't great and you can't do anything with it, then you might have to do some text processing. So I'm having to do some text processing just to get it to show the right information, where I'm stripping out just the size of the mailbox in bytes. So first of all, I get the total item size and I convert it to a string, because it doesn't have a bytes version, megabytes version, it just has the long string. And then I take off some bits at the beginning where it says bytes and then closes certain quotation marks, and then I strip off the bit at the beginning. So basically I'm trying to grab something in some brackets. When it defines the bytes, it has commas in it. Again, that doesn't convert well to a number, so I take those out by replacing the comma with nothing. And then the easy bit is converting the size to megabytes from bytes. So that's the messy bit, but the rest of it's fairly simple. So I check and see in my hash table whether I've already got a database defined. So as I mentioned before, hash table allows you to find and address information based on its name. So if I want to find a database in my list of databases, I can just pick the name out and it'll show me the details. So I see if it's there, and if it is, then I add the mailbox count. I use a plus plus to increment the number of mailboxes on that database. And I then add the size of that current mailbox on top. So if it was 100 meg the first time round, and now we've got another mailbox and it's now another 150 meg, it'll add the 150 meg on top of the 100, and it'll be 250. And then just to get the average size, we look at that and divide it across the mailbox count. So nothing complicated. If it's the first one, then it's even simpler. We define the database as a hash table itself, because we want to be able to pick out the name, active owner, mailbox count, average size, and tenant mailbox size. And then we'll add that to our original databases hash table. And the getDB table basically just does the opposite of that. It defines the HTML, and then it uses those databases to loop through the databases to then add this information in. So we'll be able to have a look at it on a friendly looking report. So if we run this script, then it's going to retrieve the information from our tenant. Some of these we haven't logged into, which is fine. And we don't get any super output there because we didn't want it to output anything. We've got the information to hand if we wanted to have a look, though, at what the data is. So if I go databases, hit enter, we can see the databases that it's found in Office 365. Oh. And if I want to find out information about a particular database, then I can just specify it there. So we can see the mailbox count, the active owner with the server that it's running on at the moment, the average mailbox size on that for our tenant on that particular database. But it's also saved the output in HTML to a file called tenant databases. And as you'll see, that's very much based on the report that we had on the other screen. So mailbox databases, Office 365. This is my tenant, and that's the point. In Office 365, it is very distributed. So this would only really be useful if you have a large number of mailboxes. But we'll see the distribution there across the environment. So we're going to have a couple of minutes left for questions in a minute. But in summary, so use PowerShell where you can to automate management. You can monitor and report on your environment using PowerShell. You can get information out of it, and you can use that to make your job easier. And you can use it to enable troubleshooting things, so you don't have to go and do all these steps manually, so you're not having to search through event logs line by line to try and identify where the errors are. You can switch on event logging across your environment, and then you can pull that information back and just scope out the errors. So that's all I've got to say for the moment. But we've got 3 or 4 minutes for some Q&A, if you'd like. Thanks very much.